Hi, everybody, and welcome back to yet another very exciting episode of the Alchemy Lab. I'm Colm Holland, and those of you who know me will know that I'm the author of this book, The Secret of the Alchemist. That's me, Colm Holland, and it's available in Kindle, ebook, and paperback on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any other great online bookstore. The reason we call this podcast The Alchemy Lab is that it is devoted to one main topic, and that is personal transformation. Every guest that I am so privileged to have on the show has at some point in their life reached that stage of personal growth, personal development, where they knew that some kind of transformation within needed to take place. And my guest today is absolutely no exception to that. He is an amazing guy. In fact, I called him an all-round great guy and also amazing father. I'd like to welcome you, Eric Carroll.
Hey, Colm, thanks for having me, my man.
You're very, very welcome. Now, for those of you who've not come across Eric or never heard of him before, he is the host and founder of an amazingly popular podcast called Dad Talk Today, and you can find him on dadtalktoday.com, but also what, on every podcast channel known to man and woman, I guess, as well. Okay, they can find you there. So your devoted topic and what you've committed your life to, and this is your full-time role, is to rekindle the conversation about what it means to be a father, to be a dad. Both from your perspective as a father, but also to the kids, and how in this time there is a real need in your eyes, and I certainly see it as well, where there is just too much absentee fatherism going on through all kinds of circumstances, sometimes the fault of men, sometimes not. And I know you're very committed to correcting that balance over there in the States, and I'm thrilled that we've got this opportunity to quiz you a bit today. So I'm going to make a quick quote, everyone, from Eric's website. I'm just going to read this because I think this absolutely nails it. And Eric, I'm going to ask you to talk to this if you may. And that is that the issue of fatherless homes and parental alienation, and we're going to talk quite a bit about what you mean by alienation as we go on, is one of the number one issues that you feel is going under the radar in modern society, whether it's here in the UK, whether it's in Europe or in the US, wherever. Together, you say that we can change the narrative and stereotype of the deadbeat. And again, I'm going to ask you to clarify what you mean by that, and restore society that is plagued with a divorce rate of 55%, which is shocking. How sad, how terribly sad that is. And when they try to take the dad out, as you say, you're here to make sure that we put the dad back in.
That's right.
Which is just a wonderful phrase. So I'm assuming then that you believe that the process actually has to begin with the dad himself.
Yep.
Do you want to address those things? So we're talking about alienation, we're going to talk about stereotype, and we're also talking about putting the dad back in. Where would you like to introduce us to this whole topic?
All right. So that's a little bit all over the place, but I'm going to try to touch on it as quick as I can, Colm. So I've been traveling around the country this year, talking to many different politicians. We got to go to one of the biggest political events of the year before the coronavirus hit. And I just went there as a spectator, got interviewed by a few people in the media, and out of nowhere they said, "Why aren't you here with the media? We want to give you a media booth." And luckily there was a guy there that had a camera that I knew, and we became a part of the media. So the politicians started sitting down and talking with us. So I said, "Talk to me about fatherlessness. Talk to me about parental alienation. What's going on in the families? Why aren't any of you guys talking about this?" And it was odd to me that many of them were very passionate about it, but most of them said the same thing. we're not told to talk about this. We're told to talk about abortion, economy, you know, all these other issues, but we're told to stick to the issues and not get out of there. And I said, I think this is the number one issue, because if you put families back together, which is the very fabric of what makes us a society, it's the meaning of life. You put that together, all these other issues will slowly start to get better themselves. And after we left that event, we've been invited to event after event with more politicians because they want to speak out about it. But I feel it is the lost discussion out of everything going on there. Nobody's talking about families. I had Colonel Alan West on not long ago, and he was talking about, he grew up here in Georgia, where I'm from as well. He said back in the 70s, you know, they had like, I think it was a 20% in the African-American household without a father. The family was really strong within the African-American households. Now they're right at 80% of households without a father. What has happened? We have substituted the father with welfare and food stamps. A lot of these parents, if they get in high conflict with their spouse, they feel like, I'm better off. I benefit more if he's not here. So it's made it look to where this guy's just a deadbeat, doesn't want to be there. But all in reality, many of them are just not getting a chance. Now, we'll never take up for the deadbeat. There's many fathers out there. They get scared. They just run. They don't want to be in their children's lives. Well, for the people that I talk to and that you see here, that's not them. They're the ones that are trying and are not being gave a chance. We've got incentives that are being gave to the states for how much is collected in child support, which I was talking to you about earlier. So it's at their best interest to make sure we get the person that's making the most money, and they're the ones that's going to be on the hook for that. They're going to be the non-custodial parent. And that, I believe, is a reason you're seeing a lot of what's going on in society. As much as I talk about what's going on in America, though, I've heard from people from Canada's going through the same issues. So is England. I've talked to people in Australia, Africa, and it's just became a really common thing that the dad just doesn't have any value anymore. And I look back at it. I lost my dad in 2013. He was a preacher, and I saw so many of the things that he did growing up. And I wasn't necessarily the person that I would have liked to have been back then. At one point in time, I was addicted to drugs, and I wanted to be a rock star. That was my life. And eventually I did clean up. He had about 3 years before he died of seeing me really just clean up and be the dad I wanted to be. And I still didn't get where I would like to before he passed, because now I find myself like, I really wish my dad was around to see what I'm doing now. This part that he didn't get to see, I finally made it. I finally grew up. Now I see all those lessons, and there's things that I do every day, daily basis, that I'm like, my dad taught me about that. Yeah, I remember having that talk with him. It didn't make sense then, but it makes sense now that I'm in that place. And
so let's talk about fatherhood as a concept. Thank you for filling us in on the work that you're trying to promote over there in the States and helping fathers who are trying to get better custodial supervision of their children. But let's just come back for a second, because when you say the media are encouraged to talk about everything but what it means for a father to have any custodial rights with the kids, isn't this going back to something much deeper in male-female relationships, but also in terms of what we value in society? For some reason, and I don't quite know how this has occurred, but I'm aware that so many fathers and their spouses put lesser value, for some whatever reason, on the role of the father in historically. Even I was watching a movie this last weekend with my wife, and it was about the guy who wrote Winnie the Pooh, A.A. Milne. The whole world knows Disney Winnie the Pooh, and the guy who wrote that was British, and it was just after the beginning of the First World War, and his life was completely, even though they lived in the same house, and even though they loved it, you know, he loved his son, his life was here and his son's life was here. The son had a nanny. The mother would have a bit of contact with the son, but the father was completely alienated just by almost tradition from the child. And even though, and that was almost institutionalized, especially amongst right. the wealthier classes. With the poorer classes, it was it wasn't an issue because the father was working 12, 14 hours a day and was completely dead by the time he got home. And, you know, there wasn't much fathering, you know, historically in that period. But in amongst the wealthier classes, even though they could afford to be together. And what's really interesting about the story of A.A. Milne and his son, who was called Christopher Robin, really was called.
Oh, that's awesome.
Is that one of the things that took place in through the book and through the writing of the book was that there was a coming together of the realization of A.A. Milne of what it meant to be a father and the benefit to his son as a result of that. So why do you think we still, in our enlightened age, when we know so much about everything else, why are we still undervaluing the role of male parenting in society, irrespective of broken marriages or whatever, just even in a regular house still, why do we tend to undervalue it? And when you see men becoming empowered to be the father in the life of the kids and the benefit to the children is immense. They live such more balanced lives. They live so much more fulfilled lives. So why are we still struggling, do you think, with this as a concept, which has led to many of the dilemmas that the dads that you're trying to help find themselves in?
Well, so we're still undervalued just as much as that stereotype of the deadbeat and the angry guy is going against us now. When you go back then, well, dad was the breadwinner. That's what his duty was to do. Mom was supposed to be at home. She did the cooking. She did the clothes. She took care of the house. Dad's the one that went and, you know, provided, and he was the protector. You know, that's the thing. Like the women's movement, I think in the early days, they were a very, very respectful movement. They fought to get rights to vote and to be able to work, and they fought against that stereotype of just being that house mom. However, when fathers do that, it's not as respected as much. It's like somehow when a father speaks or when a man speaks, he's trying to discredit a woman. Even with dad talk, since I've started this, anytime I've been told to take dad out of our name. You shouldn't be dad talk today. It needs to be parent talk today. And I was like, no, that's where you take the dad out. We're going to put it back in. Cause it's like, that's the problem. You don't see the importance of me speaking out as a dad. They're discredited, not just inside the family, but anytime they speak. Now, if you take a woman that could be saying the same things as I am right now, Cole, and they get on social media, they get on a show, they'll get 10 times the reaction. They're listened to more. They just are. And, you know, it becomes more and more evident, especially with what we're doing every day. Fathers are just, they're fighting a very tough battle. And, you know, I wish I had the answers as to what's going to change that. And that's what we're trying to find out.
Do you think there are lessons from your own story, without going into your story, there came a point when you personally realized the value? I mean, you have four daughters, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you realized the value of your role in the raising and in the nurturing of your daughters. Was there a point in your life when you thought, I really, really have something important to give to my girls?
Absolutely. I wish it would have been sooner, but when my third daughter was born, it was after I was coming down off of that career. I told you I used to book concerts, work with celebrities, and that's when I kind of got in that bad lifestyle. But I never forget the day she was born, and I was sitting there holding her and looking in her eyes, for the first time I busted. Mm-hmm. I lost it. And it wasn't no fake tears. Nobody was even there to see it. I busted because I said, here is this child that I brought into this world, and this is not the dad I want her to have. Mm-hmm. I knew something was wrong. Mm-hmm. And that was really the tipping point. It took a little bit longer after that, but that was when I realized it and started putting that into practice. And the more, even now, every day, the more that I'm with my girls and the things they come to talk to me about, I've tried to break through that stereotype. I've had the talks with them about the birds and the bees and different things. And I try to make them comfortable to talk to me about anything. I was a custodial father. You know, women, they have their monthlies. You know, I was there when that started, you know, and I didn't want to feel them or them to feel uncomfortable in talking to me. But I think sometimes we make ourselves feel uncomfortable because we don't think that's our role.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. So in a way, looking into the eyes of that daughter was a transformational moment.
Yeah.
What do you think it was that you saw? Did you feel what she was saying to you? Because they do speak from day one,
okay,
without words, but they're still speaking. Do you feel that she was saying to you that she wanted your love? She wanted your love in her life, and that was equal and co-important with that of the mother in her life? Was it that kind of transformational moment? In other words, was it a love transformational moment that took place there that you felt was reciprocal between you and her?
Definitely. I mean, it's I think I can't speak for everybody. Not everybody was as naive and hard-headed as I was, but you know, being young, full of testosterone and having your ego, especially in the business I was in, ego is a big thing. I couldn't see those faults, but I had become more and more of what I was trying to be up until that point. So I didn't get to see my second daughter being born. Me and her mom was kind of in a contentious back and forth when that happened. So this was the first time I had gotten to see one of my children born when I was already starting to feel a little convicted about my lifestyle. And it hit, man. It hit. Yeah, I mean, her looking up at me and everything, I needed it. I felt it. It's like, you're my daddy. And it's like, I don't want this guy to be your daddy. Let me go find your daddy. Even though I'm your daddy, let me go find him before I put it into practice, because I'm not doing this again.
So when you had to go and find her daddy, as you so wonderfully yeah. put it, what did you have to do? What was going on? So for guys out there who are saying, hey, I really resonate with this, Eric, you're describing me. Where do they have to go to find that person that they want to be?
You've got to be able to recognize your own faults, and you've got to, many times I think we're accustomed to trying to find out what's wrong with the person across from us rather than look in the mirror. And I think gaining wisdom is learning to accept when you're wrong. And that's actually an exciting thing when you're wrong. It's not weakness as we perceive it, because if you can see that you're wrong, that's when you can learn. If you can't see that, you never grow. And I started being able to break down that ego and to break down that barrier that I had up and say, man, I've been doing a lot of things wrong here. And I think a lot of it, Colm, is, you know, I had a kind of a troubled childhood. I was married at a really early age, right as I turned 18. My wife was 16 when we got married. I was messed with as a child. And I never talked about that.
Okay.
I never talked about that. And as I got older, you know, and I got in a relationship, it went south. And there was many things. I'll, you know, spare the details on that because I don't ever want to talk bad about my child's mother. I had my faults just as much. But I wasn't the person to speak about what was going on with me. And that's where drugs and alcohol kind of filled that void.
Yep, yep.
Okay. So once I learned, hey, drugs and alcohol are a problem, And then later on, you find out, well, I'm using this to fill that void. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you got to work through those problems. You can sit there and try to put them off, but they just get worse and worse. So being able to, you know, work through my problems and see my own faults was really the moment that got that turning.
How did you fill the void? What did you turn to within your inner self? Where did you find the love that you knew? Obviously, you must have come to the conclusion you needed. How did you find that?
Well, I became the best father I knew to be. And I can honestly say, I know it makes me sound like a bad person, but I was one of the best husbands you could ask for. I definitely had my faults, but my life was going, working, coming home, and spending time with my children. I had spent so much time being on the road that once I became a homebody, that was my thing. And, you know, I prided myself on being that husband and that father. That was what was filling that void. And then, you know, years later, for that relationship to fall apart and for me to find out nothing that I thought I had was what I actually had. There was things going on behind closed doors. That was a hard one to take, because now I got to find out something else, right? So it became all about my children. And
so what it sounds to me, and I'm sure our listeners and our viewers are absolutely riveted, by the way. You are an amazing guy. You make yourself incredibly vulnerable, which is so precious and so helpful to other people. I get the sense that when you made that decision, you wanted to be the best father you could be. What so many of us find, me included, is that there is this reservoir of love, which we didn't even necessarily realize exists, that when we make those commitments, when we make those choices, that reservoir of love actually comes to our aid. We find depths and resources within ourselves that we possibly didn't even think existed. And everybody knows I talk a lot about The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. That's why we're in this thing called the metaphorical alchemy lab, and in my book I talk about this a lot, and that is that there is that force of unconditional love that is within just, you know, a hair's breadth reach of all of us, and it's just waiting for us to say yes, I need this, I want to transform, I want to be better, I want to give love. And the moment we say that, miraculously, actually, and to quote The Alchemist, you know, the whole universe conspires to help bring that to pass. And listening to your story, it's really a classic example of how you found that love within yourself, and in turn was able to share that with the people around you. And I guess you learned a lot from what you're saying about forgiveness, and how if we don't forgive, it's really hard to move on. In your case, you did move on amazingly. So is there anything you want to say about what you've had to forgive a lot, I get the sense, in your life, and how that strengthened you over those incidents?
Yeah, so I won't lie, in the beginning, it was, I hated my child's mother, both of them, the one I divorced and the one that was keeping me from my child. All I saw was the actions. Even now, and that's being able to critique myself, there'll be times that baby's mom or somebody says something and I'm like, what did they just say? And then I have to calm myself down, and it's like, come on, man, you gotta let it go. We're only human. We react, okay, and our emotions get the best of us at times, and it's good to keep those in check. But that was the best thing. I held on to bitterness for a good while. How could you do this to me? Somebody that busted their butts so hard. I was working two jobs, 17, 18 hours a day, coming home, taking care of my children. All it was about my family. Went and got us a new home. How could you go do this to me? Hmm. You know, and I wore that chip on my shoulder for the longest. Got straight out of that, went into another relationship, and then had the problem with, you know, the mother that I'm talking to now. So forgiveness is key, guys. Carrying that baggage around, it'll get you tired, and it doesn't get you nowhere. And it's even harder when you're trying to do a co-parenting relationship with somebody that's doing the same thing. So if both of you can sit down and try to take that off. The biggest relationship I give to people, Coleman, when they write me about, I can't get along with my baby's mom, I can't get along with my baby's dad, and like, tell them, hey, would you like to go sit down with me somewhere? You know what? We made this child. Let's come together and parent. Let's go talk. You know, you find a place. You find a place, you pick it, or you find a counselor. I'll let you pick them, and we'll go and talk. We don't need courts. We don't need any of that. Let's come together and be the best parents we can be for our children. You'd be surprised how something so simple is so effective. You give them a little bit of control. You show them I'm allowing myself to be vulnerable, you know, so I can hear your feelings and that you can hear mine. We're just not accustomed to do that.
No. No, it's true. We hide behind the shells of protection to avoid the wound and the pain. And yeah. Ironically, it's not until we let those guards down that we're able to heal. Let's talk about kids for a minute. I was showing you, I've got a mug with my grandsons on there for my birthday. It's my pride and joy. It's like my trophy, you know. It's like this tells me I must be doing something right as a grandfather, or I must have done something right as a father in the first place. So, whether it's, you know, a daughter or a son, the role of the father, we understand so much about the role of the mother and the feminine in people's lives. The role of the father is critical, just as critical as the role, you know, the feminine role in a child's life. Do you feel that in your commitment to your daughters that you've been able to get more in touch with the feminine within as a male? Do you compared to other guys who maybe haven't around you, who have you found that it's been a healing thing within your own psyche to become more nurturing of your daughters? In other words, have you benefited from this as well as them?
I think men's greatest strength is also their weakness. We want to be tough. We want to be able to get through. But also at the same time, there's times you got to kind of put that to the side. I had to learn to be, I always wanted a son. You know, I thought I can go teach him how to do this. We'll go outdoors. It wasn't that way with my daughters. I had to do a different approach, just like the talks I was talking about earlier today. I wouldn't have had to do that with a boy, but I had to do that with my daughters. I learned, yeah, definitely become vulnerable. I'd let them put makeup on me, paint my toenails, do whatever. I once went to the doctor and forgot they had painted my toenails, and then went to check my feet. And I was like, oh God. But I do what you're doing now. I learn to laugh about
it. That's so funny.
It's not a big deal. We make it a big deal,
yeah.
But it's not a big deal. You know, be a father and, you know, try to put yourself in their shoes. It's the most important thing we can do as human beings, living with other human beings. That way we can understand each other. And that's what I've tried to do with my daughters. What has it got to be like for them to be a daughter being raised by a single dad? And that's what I've used to try to take my approach. I do everything as calculated as I can. And I try to think about it before I act. I don't always end up that way. I make mistakes daily. And, yeah, definitely it did help.
Yeah. And it means that you become more whole as a human being yourself.
Oh yes.
In the process. So we cannot separate, in my mind, the process of our own personal growth and transformation and the relationships where we do have people who are depending on us for love and for forgiveness, for understanding, for compassion, for nurturing, and so on. And that's what the universe put us here for,
right.
In my humble opinion, is that's why we're on Earth. That's the unique gift we share together. You and I share it with everybody else, that we're here to give love and to receive love. And beyond that, I start to get at a bit of a loss about what it's all about. If it's not about that, then what is it about? Is it winning that game of, you know, baseball? Is it about, you know, being the top businessman in the world? Is it about being the richest dude, you know, in my neighborhood? No, it, you know, they'd be nice things, but actually when you boil it down, it's what you've discovered, it's what you've learned. That's what is so precious about what you're giving to so many of the people. Just tell me, so yeah, go on.
Sorry. Could I speak to that for a second?
Yeah,
so,
do.
You know, in my 20s, that was what I thought life was about. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be a rock star. Then I started promoting concerts. I met the celebrities. I met the rock stars. And for a person with a low self-esteem, that was how I made myself feel good. And I pretty much based my life upon that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, I burned out, because you're constantly looking for that praise or that next big thing so you can get some type of attention, because you're looking for love in all the wrong places. The first place you've got to learn to love, and I tell people this before they get in a relationship, if you don't love this guy, you're never going to be able to love anybody else. Find out how to love this person, and then you can have true love with the person over there. And I guess that kind of speaks earlier to what you was talking about, filling the void as well. I think a lot of us fill the void with other people's praise and attention, especially on social media. We like getting those thumbs and those hearts and stuff. All that stuff is trash, guys. The real love is what you're going to find inside of your home. I just wanted to speak on that for a second.
Fantastic. That's absolutely. I want to just mention, talk about miracles. Every now and again, when you commit to do what you've done, to transform and to give love, stuff happens, miracles. Have you got one miracle at all that you would feel confident about sharing with us that wouldn't make you too vulnerable? Is there a story or something really special that happened for you, that where, you know, maybe the kids gave back to you something that just told you were on the right track?
I could give you stories about my kids all day long. I mean, especially at my oldest, she's 16, and I was raising her as a single father when she was 1 year old.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I've always been really close to her. I love my kids all the same, but me and her have these conversations. Sometimes she'll just come in the room and talk to me for 3 or 4 hours. And one night, I'll never forget, she was sitting there, and I was talking to her, and she looked at me and she said, "Daddy, you know, sometimes you're talking to me and I'm sitting here listening, thinking, I don't know what in the world he's talking about, but one day it's going to make sense." And I said, that's it. She gets what I'm doing. I was planting those seeds for the moment that it needs to sprout, it would. But I would say the miracle really come is me sitting here doing what I'm doing now. I never aspired to be a podcaster. I never aspired to be the guy on screen talking about how I can't see my daughter. That's not definitely something you want to go around bragging about.
No.
But here it is, in November will be a year since I lost my job, and we have done we're about to do our second season, or no, we've done 2 seasons on TV. We're about to go to a new channel and shoot more TV, and our viewers and people have helped carry us until this moment, and I'm doing something that helps people. My miracle, my dream has always been to help people, like my dad. And I never aspired to be in the ministry, but here I am in a ministry and doing something that I love to do, that I know is making a difference. So that's been a big miracle in my life, because I never knew this would happen.
That's amazing. Incredible what you're doing, Eric. It's phenomenal. I know that hundreds of thousands of people are really benefiting from what you're giving. I can see that there's been such a huge shift in your own life for the better. Sometimes losing our job can be a really good thing. And I think in a way, you know, it's completely moved the direction of your life in a way that you never expected. And, you know, love has a tendency to do that. When we look to love to help us, then, you know, this is the kind of thing that happens. I'm going to ask you to give us one thing before we close. We're nearly okay. out of time, by the way. I just looked at the clock. I can't believe it feels like we've only just started. But just one thing that somebody said to you at some point in your life that really helped you make the turning point. Was there ever one thing somebody said that you took to heart that you were able to move on, that, you know, became a strength to you? But while you're thinking about that, I'm just going to remind everybody out there, if you've been interested in what Eric's talking about today, and especially if you live in the States, but not exclusively, and you're in a particular, especially as a dad, if you're in a particular situation where you could use some support, where you could use a listening ear from other dads in a similar situation, where you're hoping to get a higher level of involvement in your children's lives, then the address to go to is Dad Talk Today, dadtalktoday.com. And this is Eric Carroll. So you can Google Eric, you'll come up straight away. And you can begin to find the level of support that you may be looking for. So Eric, is there one quote that somebody said or something you read that, you know, has meant, you know, a turning point for you?
I had a boss of mine. I'd really rather consider him a friend. When I was a couple of years ago, when I went through my divorce, that he was there for me when most people or bosses would have just kept riding me and wanting the numbers. He was very sensitive to what I was going through and would talk to me and help me out a lot. And me and him as well, used to have 3-4 hour conversations and even talk, you know, outside of work. And one of the things that he told me that has stuck to me to this day is the best counselors that you will ever find are the ones that don't talk, but listen. And that made me shut up, because I've always been the one that wants to talk or be right. You know, and I learned I need to be a better listener before I can talk. And that's really stuck with me over the years.
That's great advice, especially if you want to be a dad.
Yeah,
learn to listen first. Yeah, absolutely. Eric, thank you so much for giving up your time today. Really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on the Alchemy Lab. It's been an absolute eye-opener, and I hope it's been helpful to many listeners out there to discover you and to discover the amazing work that you're doing, both on the podcast but outside of the podcast, in trying to change the way that people's circumstances are being dictated to in what is a really difficult time for many parents who are dealing with custody situations. So all power to you, the power of love be with you, and thanks again. And thank you everyone for listening. This has been another amazing episode of the Alchemy Lab. Had no idea it was going to be this fantastic. And you all take care. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you.